Hi, hello, Balloon. My name is Peter Saville. You're listening to Type Radio, whatever that is. And now we're talking in News Planted.
This is Type Radio.
Now we are talking.
Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
So I do them.
Here you are.
But is that because you're English?
Probably, yes. And but it's not from a desire to see or hear myself everywhere. But I mean, it's always nice to be asked.
Yeah.
And when you start saying no, you feel like you're turning into some kind of megastar or something, like no interviews. It's kind of weird. He doesn't want to do an interview or something like that. Suddenly it kind of feels like you're Michael Jackson or something.
Or Beyonce.
Yeah. No.
So...
Yeah.
We're on now? Oh, we're recording.
Yeah, we're recording. So it just seems strange to say no. So I'm quite happy. I'm kind of quite happy to do them, and it only gets weird when I feel like I'm on auto repeat. So
do you get that feeling after?
Well, I did a talk at Fabrica in Italy about 6 months ago, and I was just there for a day to go and talk at Fabrica, but then suddenly there's I think there were four or five Italian journalists who heard somehow about it, and so they all wanted to do interviews. So I'm there for one day. So I have to talk to 200 people at Fabrica, which is why I said I would go, but then suddenly there's five journalists to talk to, which was not what I wanted to do, but... And I made the mistake to do that talk with the journalists before going to talk to the students of Fabrica.
Okay.
So, you know, we kind of started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I ended up talking for 2 hours or so to the journalists, and then walked into a room of 200 people. And I felt like I'd said everything.
So what did you do during the talk?
I was in a weird mood by the time I gave the talk. And I kind of was a bit of a loss because they didn't ask me questions and the journalists had been asking me questions. And I just, I remember when I'd finished, I kind of thought, I didn't like that. In fact, I think I was more positive and in a better mood talking to the journalists than I had been talking to the students of Fabrica. And that was a little bit ironic because I was there for Fabrica, not for the journalists.
You sort of felt you wasted your energy on the
journalists? I didn't waste it. That was cruel to say wasted. Oh, okay. I just spent it. Mm. You know what I mean? I was just spent my energy.
Well, you should have spent it on the...
Yes, and it was all a bit, yeah. And of course, with some interviews, obviously, some people ask the same questions. So it does get a bit weird doing...
What's the most common one?
Well, the common ones are the music-related ones because a lot of people are kind of, you know, understandably obsessive about certain things that I was involved in. So, you know, the kind of Joy Division questions and Factory questions and which is nice in a way. I mean, there's nothing...
Yeah.
You know, I mean... You know, I got involved in something in my last year at art college...
Do you regret it now?
No, not at all. It's the most important thing, but it was just one of those accidental things that you're just there and you start doing something with some people who you meet, and you know, obviously you just get on, everyone gets on and does the best they can. You're not aware of it, of what its long term consequence will be. In fact, if you were, you would probably be so terrified you couldn't do anything. So you just get on and do something. Now, if that thing that a group of you got on and did, if that thing then, you know, turns out to be special or have meant something to people, then that's actually really nice. So it's fine to talk about it. But it's a bit odd when it's like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also weird, you know, like, you know, you if I go to a college or to a seminar like this to talk, I mean, there's bound to be people there who are between, let's say, 20 and 25. Well, they weren't even born when I did some of that work. So you don't know what that means to them. You know, I have no idea. I have absolutely...
You don't know what the impact...
No. I mean, it obviously means to some of them. It means something. I mean, like, you know, Joy Division still follow me around, and Tony Wilson and New Order are followed around by something. And you don't really know what it means to subsequent generations. Yeah. You have no idea.
I have one question about that. Do you think the amount of the success would have been the same if, like, the Joy Division or the New Order, either or, records would have had the less success than they did? I mean, they were like, they had so much impact at
they
the
did.
Time. And if they wouldn't have had that impact, do you think your success would have been...
No, it's fine. I mean, the interesting... I mean, some things kind of had to happen. I mean, I wrote down in my notebook the other day, somebody had to be Peter Saville. Okay, now.
Oh, okay.
You just happy to be the one.
What I meant was that something like that had to happen, or would have happened, to cross things over. The most positive take on this issue, and we're sitting here at a design conference, okay? The interesting thing is this, that there's been a lot, and there were a lot, of really great designers and pioneers and evangelists of design all the way through the 20th century. Much, much, much better at what they do than I've been. But, and particularly in the field of graphic design, the work they did was very much for, you know, kind of worthy institutions and companies, and like the Museum of Modern Art in New York, or a company like Knoll or IBM or something like that. I mean, great work that kind of communicated to the converted. You know, that if you were buying Knoll furniture, you probably appreciated the kind of the graphic identity that went with it. Mm. And if you were visiting the Museum of Modern Art, you probably appreciated the kind of the Bodoni outside on the nameplate or on the catalogue. But it didn't really cross over to people who weren't interested. Now, interestingly, the two or three of us who were involved in using the palette of good design, we used that palette for pop in the 80s. Malcolm and I doing covers, Neville doing the face. We used the palette of good design, and particularly, interestingly, the palette of typography. We used it for pop. It was delivered, in the context of the music, it was delivered by the music. The music delivered it to hearts. And it crept a little bit into people's minds. So, I meet people now who have a television company, they have a bar, they have a clothes label. They grew up on New Order covers, on Factory Records. And they want a business card like their Factory covers. They want an identity, they want a logo, they want packaging, they want a brand.
Do you feel trapped?
No, not trapped by it. The point is, what's really the interesting kind of analogy, or the interesting kind of conclusion from that, is that it was the music that delivered it.
It's basically the context of a sort of a classical typographical design put on something else that had nothing to do with it,
nothing
basically.
Nothing to do with it at all, but that they loved. Yeah. It crossed it over. So, I mean, the tradition...
And it made sort of... In that way, it sort of made sense.
It was something from... because, you know, young people get obsessive about things, and they get particularly obsessive about music. Now, those youthful obsessions, adolescent obsessions, don't usually make it into their adult life. Mm. So, you know, you're late 60s, you come back from college, the Grateful Dead posters and T-shirts finally go out, and you kind of, you know, get your hair cut, you get a suit, and you enter the real world. Not much of the kind of adolescent obsession made it into the adult life. It was like shedding a skin of youth and becoming another person. You know, Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate or whatever. You know, you come back from college and yeah. someone says, I've got one word for you, plastics. Yeah. It's, you know, and you have to, you know, you have this like dumb new life in the adult world.
But are you saying like the design, the classical what, design is sort of so transcends that era?
What happened was that the palette of good design that we associated with pop culture at that time was transportable
yeah.
into the adult world. Now this is quite interesting. So actually we helped, or we contributed to, via pop, the crossing over of design culture. I mean, if we were to go back 25 years, the idea that we would be sitting here discussing type and design is totally and utterly unimaginable. Completely unimaginable. I would be with half a dozen like groovy young people discussing typography. I mean, unheard of. No. Absolutely unheard
discussing
of.
Discussing music and drugs and whatever.
The connection of the whole thing together. This was unimaginable in the 70s. Totally and utterly unimaginable. And it crossed over. I mean, that you have like this thing about typography. I mean, 25 years ago, nobody was interested in typography. I mean, maybe some guys in New York or something like that. But generally speaking, people were not interested in typography. But it's become associated with things that we find interesting. And has become part of the kind of the interface of contemporary culture. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, okay. This whole thing is... Do you have more? More questions? Because, like, we're doing this in the wrong order.
Sorry, ask more questions.
We just started
we'll drop
talking.
Drop this.
Okay. Because we had these, like...
I smoke.
Yeah, you
they
can
don't,
hear
okay. so ask
yeah.
them.
Okay, guys, there's only a man if I have a cigarette. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Look, we used to have these 30 yes or no questions. And
30, okay.
Yeah,
we'd
start... Well, you don't...
No, let's try it. It's an interesting test to see if I can do a yes, no question.
Okay.